Joining us on the phone this morning is Brandon McMillan. Brandon is the host of the Emmy-winning TV show Lucky Dog, and he's going to be part of Capital City Casa Presents After Hours. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning.
We are so excited to have you with us. We're going to start back with a little bit of history of you. You trained exotic animals. In fact, training exotic animals runs in your family. So we're curious, what was it like training animals that most people deem dangerous?
I don't look at them as dangerous. You know, danger is all relative to the person that either does or doesn't do it. Like, for example, I know a lot of big wave surfers. These guys surf mountains, and to me, that's dangerous to them. It's just a day in the office. So to me, I mean, I don't look at it as dangerous because I grew up around it. My father was a wild animal trainer for the circus. My mother actually did that as well. My uncle, my entire family did that. So then they started training animals for the movies. So to me, growing up with it, you know, just walking a tiger, a 500-pound Siberian tiger, it was very normal to me. I didn't look at it as a dangerous animal. Believe it or not, I didn't actually think of it as a dangerous animal. And if I look back and if I could do it all again, I would have educated myself a little differently. But the way I was taught, they taught me to look at the animal as just an animal, not a completely dangerous animal. I would teach my students when I taught people. I taught a school out here in California when I was about 20 years old, and I taught my students to respect the animal as a very dangerous animal, because one wrong move, it could be a really bad day for you.
Absolutely.
I was raised in a different state of mind. To me, it was like putting your business suit on, going to the office and sitting down at the desk all day and punching numbers.
You know, speaking of the exotic animals, then you made the transition to training domestic dogs. Tell us a little bit about what the real difference is that people may not know between training dogs compared to exotic animals.
Well, believe it or not, training dogs is way more difficult than training exotic animals.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Training exotic animals is extremely simple because their wild animal instincts have not left them. They're still a wild animal, just in a captive environment. And dogs, because they've been domesticated for thousands of years, they take on more human-like personality traits. They take on very emotional state of mind. They have anxiety. They have, not to say that wild animals don't have this, but dogs have it in a very human-like sense. Dogs need certain things like emotional support and companionship constantly by their human. You're not going to really find that in wild animals. Wild animals, the way you train them is, like, for example, a big cat. As long as you give a chunk of meat, that cat will, it's going to target on that meat, and it's going to do pretty much whatever you want for that chunk of meat. Where a dog, if it's having a bad day, it'll shut down on you, and no amount of food or treats is going to change that dog's mind. And the reason it shut down on you is it could be one of many reasons. Because they are raised in a very human-like environment, they take on a lot of our personality traits. So dogs will shut down on you, unlike a wild animal. Wild animals really don't shut down on you. Wild animals, and the reason why they don't shut down like a dog is because they're survivalist. In the wild, if they shut down, they die. So it's not an option. Dogs, if they shut down, they know the humans will always step in to take care of them.
So Brandon, what inspired you to rescue dogs that were deemed unadoptable and give them a second chance?
You know, when I was training animals for the movies, our company, we did everything. We did the large predators, we did the pachyderms, and of course, any animal training company for the movies, you always have a dog pack. And I remember our dog pack, we always had about, you know, 10 to 15 dogs strong that we'd always have our very common dogs that are used for commercials and movies. Like, you always have your Goldens, your Labs, your Rotties, your Shepherds. These are very common dogs you're going to see in the movies. And at that time, the company I worked for, they were very old school in the sense that they got their dogs all from breeders, very reliable, reputable breeders that knew the history of the parents, and they want to make sure the hips and elbows are strong and this and that. And so one day we had to put one of our best working Rottweilers down. And I remember saying to my uncle, owned the company, and he was going to get another Rottie. He was actually on the phone to buy another Rottie, and they were in Pennsylvania. And I told him, I said, you know, I live down the street from a dog shelter. Why don't you let me go rescue a dog from a shelter? And he's like, yeah, those dogs are damaged goods. They're broken, this and that. I'm not trying to insult my uncle whatsoever, because I've definitely changed his mind, but he was just that 1960s way of thinking. So I said, listen, I said, I'll put myself on the line here. I'm wrong, I'm wrong. So I go down there, I rescue a Rottie. She's a female. Her name is Raven. She was about a year old, I think, at the time. It took me a few months to really train her for the, film-style training. And then within a few months, she went on her first job. She knocked it out of the park. And next thing you know, she was one of our best working dogs in the pack. And then throughout the years, we stopped going to breeder. And next thing you know, a few years later, our entire pack was all rescue dogs. Well, throughout that time, I started learning and educating myself on the number of dogs that are euthanized in America just because they can't find homes. And the number at the time was around, it was between 1.5 to 2 million. Now, the numbers have gone down substantially. That was also about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers have gone down substantially over the years. We're hovering at about maybe 700 to 1 million still a year. So it's still a major epidemic, massive room for improvement, but we have improved. So that's what got me into the true rescue dogs. And in 2011, I quit the film industry altogether just to rescue shelter dogs that are about to get euthanized. And I trained them up to be service dogs for disabled people.
Wow, that's so awesome. And speaking of, you know, staying on that subject of being, you know, most of the dogs that you do rescue become therapy or service dogs. For some that don't know, what are some of the typical tasks that these dogs are actually trained to do?
Well, it depends on what area of service that they're in. For example, roots of my service dog training was known as physical assist service dogs. So our roots of our foundation, Argus Service Dogs, was we trained for disabled veterans that typically got hit by IEDs over in the Middle East. A lot of these men and women, they had their limbs removed from the blasts. So our dogs would physically assist them. They would pick up items off the ground that you couldn't reach. If you needed help up and down curbs or steps, you could do what's called a brace command, where the dog stiffens its entire body up, and you could actually help yourself up and down curbs, steps. You could help yourself from the wheelchair onto a chair, a couch. So the dog technically is more of a cane, and we can teach it to open doors. We can teach it to turn on light switches, which thankfully nowadays, as technology gets better, light switches are turned on by apps on your phone and stuff like that.
Right.
But, yeah.
Exactly. So it has made it different. I used to teach dogs to actually open the refrigerator and bring them like a bottle of water. I stopped doing that because I got multiple reports whenever they leave the house for a couple hours without their dog, they'd come back and it looks like the gremlins were fed after midnight because the dog actually opened the fridge and helped themselves.
And had a party.
you could say that again. So I stopped doing that. I said, just have water by your couch.
Right. Brandon, do you believe your show, Lucky Dog, has made people, you know, maybe feel differently about adopting shelter animals?
I'd like to think that I contributed. I'm not going to sit here and take all the credit because the ball was definitely rolling.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never a major show on a mainstream network. It was always smaller shows on cable channels that basically, they never really made a big impact. Now, I will say there's one show out there that did make a big impact. She's actually a good friend of mine. That's the Pitbulls and Parolees show.
Yes.
And that's Tia. We worked at the same company back in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's when I was 18 years old. We work at the same company, so I know her very well. So she actually technically got the ball rolling. It was still on a cable network. It was showing only mainly pit bulls.
Right.
A lot of people were afraid to turn the channel on because they were like, ooh, I can't watch a pit bull. So when my show came about, you know, our idea was basically, all right, we're going to show the soft side of dogs. Very difficult to get people to tune into a show where all you're doing is showing the soft side. Whenever you had, at the time, the TV market was dominated by, you know, people wanted to see, like, you know, aggression training, and they wanted to see bad dogs and dogs, you know, out of control, and how these trainers are putting their own selves on the line just to handle these dogs. My show was very, very soft, and so we had to think of a way to get the audience to tune in, to sit there for a half hour during the super soft, you know, make your heart melt.
Sure.
Style series. So the way we figured that was through Saturday morning. You got to figure, if you notice, the best example I'll give is morning news is always happy,
mm-hmm.
and evening news is always depressing.
Yes.
Yep.
So in morning times, people are generally in a much better mood, unless it's tax day.
Exactly.
So on April 15th, we won't air our show.
Right.
But typically morning times, people are in a much better mood. And so we said, well, hey, the PBS, at the time, they got rid of all their Saturday morning cartoon lineup. And they were looking for all age programming that's, you know, good for adults, good for kids, good for everybody. That's when Linton Entertainment, the production company that produces Lucky Dog, that's when they approached the CBS. They said, we know what will be good on your network. CBS loved the idea. They loved the show. And next thing you know, in the spring of 2013, we were in production.
That's just absolutely amazing. You know, from Aaron and I, you know, huge thank you for what you do. Let's kind of stick with, you know, the TV show, go a little bit behind the scenes. When you do choose a dog to become a therapy or service dog, of course, you can't fit everything into a TV show, but how long does it normally take to train one of your therapy or service dogs?
Well, it depends on the dog. There's really no easy answer, but I'll say this. If the dog is a physical assist dog for somebody who has a serious condition, like if they're in a wheelchair, it's going to take 6 to 8 months to train that dog.
Mm-hmm.
If a person is diabetic and I have to teach a dog to indicate on the sugar drop, then again, that's going to take probably 6 to 8 months to train the dog. Now, if it's a therapy dog, I mean, believe it or not, if I got the right dog and if I'm on my game, I could train a good therapy dog in probably 6 weeks, maybe 8 if I'm slow.
Wow.
Well, Olive, I'll give you the best example. Olive, she's a therapy dog for the CASA program now. And I think it took me about 6 weeks to train that dog. I'd have to look at my calendar, but she trained up very quickly because when it comes to therapy dogs, more about the personality than it is about the training itself. Training's easy. I could teach that dog to lie down for an hour. I could teach that in a week or two. I could teach that dog to sit and be mindful in the middle of a crowded restaurant for an hour at a time. That would only take me a couple of weeks. But there's certain things I cannot teach, and that's personality traits. Olive is just a very stable dog. She's not afraid of loud bangs or crashes. That's the kind of dog I can literally land a helicopter right next to, and she won't even wake up.
Oh, wow.
And that's something that can't be taught. That's just a personality trait. So 90% of therapy dogs, it's personality. And that's the hard part. You think like, oh, okay, great. Well, then training a therapy dog is easy. Not so fast. You have to do a lot of testing. And if they're uncertain in certain areas, like, for example, teaching a dog to lie down, like in a place like here, like the ranch, that's easy because it's a very controlled environment here. I make sure that there's middle to no distraction. And now let's get them out in public and let's see how they handle distractions. You know, that's the difficult part because you know you have a gym and you know you're so close to hitting the end result, and all of a sudden you see a little bit of a problem. You have to problem solve quick with therapy dogs. Otherwise, your entire building that you spent 2 months building, suddenly you realize, uh-oh, there's one little part in there that the whole thing might collapse.
Well, Brandon, we're curious, what's the most rewarding situation that you've placed a therapy or service dog in? Is there one that sticks out?
Well, Olive, definitely, she's the one that sticks out. Most dogs, I'm okay with sending them home to their new family, but Olive, I wanted to keep her.
You know, Brandon, Olive's in studio right now with us. She's just laying here being so good, and she heard me say her name, and now she's wagging her tail, and now she's coming over. I could see why you'd want to keep her. She's phenomenal.
Yeah, she was good. I'm trying to think of the other therapy dogs that I really am. I remember a few years ago, it was a boxer-bulldog mix. She became a therapy dog for children in a reading program in an elementary school. So basically, what they've learned over the years, this is a very popular type of therapy dog. What they've learned over the years are kids that are very difficult with reading or speaking in groups of people, public speaking. A lot of kids are very shy. And so when it comes to the teacher calling on them in class, if they read me that next paragraph, the kids shut down. But what they've learned is the kids will not shut down if they're reading to a dog. There's these after-school programs that children are reading to dogs, and they're actually getting better. They're excelling at their reading because they're reading to a dog every single day. They're not reading to their classmates because, you know, they're shy. So this particular dog I trained, she became one of those dogs. All the dog has to do is basically, you know, sit there and let the child read to them for an hour at a time. Yeah, so she's been part of that program now for, I think, 3 years. And the cool part is thinking in that three-year period, how many kids this one dog has helped. Because the difference between a therapy dog and a service dog helps one person for their entire life. A therapy dog helps hundreds, if not thousands of subjects their entire life. So it's kind of cool. Therapy dogs essentially make a bigger impact in the masses. And so like Olive, for example, she's helped, from what I understand, well over 100 children so far. And she's only been doing it, I think, a little over 2 years.
Yeah, that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's a young dog, so she has a long career ahead of her. So by the time Olive, you know, retired, we're talking therapy dogs, you can retire them when they're very elderly because it's not a stressful job they're doing. By the time she's retired, I mean, she'll probably have helped maybe 2,000-3,000 kids in her career. So that right there is impactful. So if you think about the impact of just one therapy dog and thousands of people they've helped, that's an impact. If you look at that on a chart and say, here's 1,000 people, and you point an arrow to one dog, that's how I look at it.
That's awesome. Why did you choose to get involved with Capital City CASA?
Because, let's just say this, these children, they're in a situation that no fault of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yep.
If I can help, one thing I know how to do well, I don't know how to do a lot of things well. I can't, you know, I can't sing, I can't dance. Trust me, I have two left feet when I dance. And there's nothing, I can really offer the world except training you an animal that can actually make an impact in some area. So whenever they approach me about the program, I jumped on it because I had never been approached by another program like this. I love a good challenge, and I love whenever I see the results, I see the impact of what the dog is doing for the kids. So, I mean, let's face it, kids, they're a lot like animals. They really don't have their own voices in many sense. They're not strong enough to say what's really going on. And when you have these kids in the program and they have to sit there on the witness stand and say what their parents or what their someone did to them, that is scary as hell. I couldn't imagine what that feels like for, you know, a six-year-old child, because when you're that young, you're afraid of everything, especially your parents.
Absolutely. You know, transitioning to something a little bit happier note, of course, you've already told us that you fell in love with Olive. You didn't really want to give her back. So we were kind of curious now, how exactly did you come to choose Olive to become a therapy dog?
Every dog that I meet, the first thing that runs to my mind when I meet a dog at the shelter is, what will you be good for? I don't really know the answer to that when I first meet them. The only thing I know about a dog in a shelter is basically what they look like and essentially maybe somewhat their age. That's pretty much it. And so whenever I meet a dog, my goal is to get them working no matter what they're doing, whether it's a service dog, a therapy dog, or just basic emotional support for somebody who's going through heavy depression or something like that. That's my game. I'm good at that. I'm good at identifying personality traits. I'm good at identifying what a dog would potentially be good at and then making it happen. So when I met Olive, I could tell there was something about her right away. I will admit I didn't see therapy dog right away. I saw something in her, but I didn't think too much of her as a working dog. I just thought she was going to be a cute dog, great for a family. It wasn't until a couple weeks later she started growing on me. And the reason she started growing on me was because she's the one who kind of told me what she wanted to do. Typically, I'm the one who says, okay, this is your job and we're going to make this happen. I didn't have that idea idea for all of it first, and suddenly she started coming over to me and sitting next to me as I'm watching TV for an hour. And next thing you know, I look over, I'm like, you have stopped there. There's been, you know, all kinds of noises, there's been all kinds of distractions. I've gotten up 5 times, and you just sat there right next to me the entire time. That right there is a good foundation for what a therapy dog needs to do. Let's turn you into a therapy dog. So she's the one who kind of, she told me. It usually doesn't happen that way. I'm the one who says, hey, this is the game plan, and let's do it. Olive said, hey, this is the game plan, let's do it.
So we've already kind of touched on when a kid is in court, they're testifying. For an adult, just being in court, whether you're in trouble or not, is terrifying. So we know that kids, you know, sitting there, they need to testify. That's scary. So what exactly is Olive trained to do to help the children that Capital City CASA helps?
Well, she's trained to just basically sit there and ease the kids. The one thing you say about kids is everything changes when you put a cute little puppy in front of them. Suddenly, they forget about all the stress, all the anxiety of what's going on. And so Olive is basically there to sit there, and they can do whatever they want, or they can pick her up, they can flip her upside down. She's been trained and tested in all those areas. So her job, if I had to just break it down in very layman's terms, her job is just to ease the stress and get them to open up. It's easier said than done, because, like I said, it does take the right dog. It takes the right dog that knows how to connect with kids. Olive has a way of using her eyes, those big round 50-cent pieces that she has on her head, and she has a way of literally cutting you in half with her soul.
Oh, yes.
She demands respect. She demands attention. It's not like, hey, you want to talk about this? She's like, no, we're talking. She's funny like that. It's almost like she's it's almost like she's Joe Pesci stuck in, like, a cute little poodle body. You know what I'm saying? She is going to take care of business whether you like it or not.
If Olive could speak, she'd be like Joe Pesci. That's great.
Her eyes demand respect. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like her job, basically, is like, I don't care what you think. We're doing this.
No, I totally get what you mean, because I've met her twice now. And when she comes in, I mean, we're busy here at the station. I drop everything because I'm like, ooh, Olive's here. You get excited. And you're right. For a small dog, she commands big attention. And that's what she gets.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very strange contrast. And it's such a cute little dog. But again, usually dogs like her, the very stereotypical poodle like that, they're little brats and they get away with murder. Which I'm not saying she's not a brat, but when it's game time, she knows, she puts that uniform on and she knows what time it is. She knows how to do her job. So most dogs, they never break out of character of being the brat. I think Olive, she knows when she walks through the doors of that courthouse, she knows what time it is and she knows she has to put her actual, you know, uniform on. It's strictly business for the next couple hours. But then when she gets home, I've heard the reports that she's the biggest brat on the face of the planet.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all.
Hey, trust me, I had that dog here for 2 months.
You know her well.
I know her very well.
Brandon, when people attend Capital City CASA Presents After Hours with you, what kind of evening can be expected?
Well, whatever you want. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, well, put it this way, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that have dog questions. Whenever I do events like this, everybody has a dog question. And the funniest part is everybody thinks they have the one in a million, you know, dog question, like, ugh, I have such a unique problem. What most people don't realize is most people out there have the same dog problems over and over. I'm expecting a lot of people coming up to me and saying, I have a problem you probably never heard of, you know, and I'm like, try me. So I've heard of all the problems out there. Every once in a while, somebody hits me with the one in a million wild card. I commend them for that.
Right.
And they get a green collar for that. But but typically, yeah, it's the same questions. And that's why I'm actually very good at answering them, because it's the same problems that I've been solving on thousands of dogs for years now. So I always tell people, I say, there's a reason why there's different levels of dog trainers out there, because the experienced ones have been there and done that as far as problems. An experienced dog trainer has seen these problems thousands of times, as opposed to a dog trainer that just started last year. They've only seen this problem once or twice, so they really don't know how to solve it. They don't know the game. I've been training professionally now for 20 years, and I've seen these problems time and again. So every problem out there, I've solved it hundreds of times. So it's really easy for me now. It's kind of fun, because when you have a game plan you can quickly execute, it makes your day go along so much smoother, as opposed to just kind of winging it and figuring it out. When it comes to dog training, you have to have a plan. Without a game plan, you're just winging it. And winging it on an animal, you're experimenting on the animal, and that's not fair.
Well, Brandon, we are so excited about you coming on Wednesday, November 14th. You're coming to Jefferson City. We're so excited about this. Capital City CASA presents After Hours featuring Brandon McMillan, host of the Emmy-winning TV show Lucky Dog. Brandon, we're thrilled to be talking to you this morning. Thank you so much for calling in. And from two dog lovers to another dog lover, thank you for what you do. You're making a huge difference.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.